The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
Now, our technology correspondent Jess Kelly joins me now from Lisbon. Hello, Jess, how are you?
Good, Pat, how are you?
I'm grand. Now tell us what's going on at the Web Summit.
So this is the third year that we're here in Lisbon, and it's as busy as ever. I kind of walked in this morning full of energy, and we're only at 11 o'clock and we're all exhausted already. There's so many conversations. There are thousands of people going to be here across the few days. The opening ceremony was last night, and Tim Berners-Lee, who is the man who invented the World Wide Web, was the keynote speaker. And what he had to say has kind of become the big talking point of the summit so far.
What do you think is the single most important ethical issue when it comes to the future of technology and its increasingly complicated intersection with humanity?
You know, I would have answered that question easily 10 years ago. I would have said, oh, well, you know, keeping it free and open. The web shouldn't be controlled by anybody. But now part of the contract for the web is, in a way, a bit of there's a coming of age here. There's a realizing that there are some simple issues we should fight for, like freedom or free speech. But when you actually look at a lot of the issues in the contract, it's actually complicated. So if you want me to pick one, say, this is most important, that would mislead her. Everybody would rush off fighting for that, but then they would then realize the unintended consequences of pushing for anonymity and encryption. Actually, that's all very well. But when you push for anonymity, then what do you do with people who put hate speech online? Where do you draw the line?
And that's very interesting. The man who's credited with creating the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee. What's this about a Magna Carta?
Very interesting. So as you heard there, he said, we're kind of at a tipping point when it comes to the internet. The idea with the World Wide Web was to connect people, regardless of what they believe in, what they do, their location, anything like that. And in recent times, with things like fake news, hate speech, using it for terrorism, that has all changed. So what he's looking to do is put together a contract for the internet, for the World Wide Web, with the goal of protecting rights and protecting freedoms online. So he is putting together a contract, and it's going to be published in May of next year. 50 organizations have already signed it. People like Google, or companies like Google and Facebook, are on board with this. And it's all to try and protect against, segregation of the World Wide Web, to protect freedom of speech, privacy. The different parts of the contract that we know about so far state that governments have to ensure that every citizen can access the internet, that they don't police their use of the internet. It's, you know, he's looking to roll back on censorship, that sort of thing. So while that does sound very good and very interesting, the conversations that are happening here on the ground with the people who are making this technology are wondering how exactly is it going to be enforced, and what does that mean? I suppose, what is the lesser of two evils in those different scenarios?
I mean, so you can understand a Cambridge Analytica scandal, you know, where Facebook has been fined. The situation being, if they depend on the big platforms on the internet, the Facebooks and the Googles and all the rest of it, and the Bings and every other search engine, to do their own policing, you just wonder, how will that work? I mean, whose view determines whether something is free speech or hate speech?
It's so interesting. It comes back to the fact that at this moment in time, the tech giants, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Twitters, they all answer to their own community standards. And that means that things can slip through the net. However, you know, just a few minutes ago, I was talking to a man from an organization called Tech Against Terrorism. And what they specialize in is trying to utilize technology to try and track down on terrorism, but also not just push them off the different platforms. Because his point to me was that, you know, if we were to regulate the internet tomorrow, the terrorist acts will still happen. They'll still find ways. So it's just about ensuring that we as citizens who want to use it for the right reasons don't end up having, you know, an internet for Ireland, an internet for the UK, an internet for the rest of Europe, because that's what we're at risk of if we go down the regulation route. The very nature of the World Wide Web, Leo Varadkar said this at the launch of the government's strategy for online safety. the very nature of the internet, it's the World Wide Web. You can't have legislation in just one part, because what ends up happening is invisible borders appear, and that will clamp down. So, you know, if you want to travel from one country to another country and work online as you go, you may face issues, which is what you see in China, for example. So it's definitely one to watch. These keynotes last year, Stephen Hawking gave the keynote, and obviously very tragically passed away since. But these keynotes always do set the tone. And you're seeing a lot of discussions now happening, both here in the speakers forum and on the main stage, about what this could mean.
There's a guy called Jonathan Zittrain, a law professor at Harvard, author of The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. And he's pointing out that the web we have isn't the only web that is possible.
Okay.
So therefore, you know, we have the World Wide Web as is currently constructed, but there's nothing to stop malign forces constructing another web.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it just, the issues are, if we were to do that, if we were to step aside and try and form another web or internet connection or existence for the online space, the same issues are going to arise, and you're going to have the same people concerned about freedom of speech, about, you know, propaganda, fake news, all of these things. This is what happens when you have humans utilizing a service. If we just had chatbots that could do all of our stuff for us and there was no human interference, you wouldn't have the issues that we have today. So I think, you know, rather than starting from scratch, I think we do need to look at this. The contract will be very interesting to read, but as I said, the conversation here on the ground is, how exactly do you police it, and, you know, how do you enforce it? He's suggesting that you would have one aspect for the government, one aspect for the companies, but then we as citizens who utilize all these services would have to take some form of responsibility where possible.
All right, Jess, you'll be reporting obviously over the coming days on the activities at the Web Summit, but for the moment we want to put a few questions from our listeners to you. I'd like to get a smart pen to digitize my notes using my Huawei P Smart. Moleskin too expensive. I'm considering Live Scribe, but the app reviews for the previous version were dreadful. Is it any better now? And does it work with Android?
I actually haven't used LiveScribe, but I know a number of people who do and who rely on it quite a lot. So I would say give it a go. I think they're constantly working to improve these things. In terms of digitizing your notes, the Moleskine version is great, but it's super expensive. You can just buy a stylus and use something like OneNote from Office 365. That could be worth looking at. For the Huawei P Smart, it's a small enough screen, so I'm not 100% sure, but I would definitely consider LiveScribe.
Yeah, how does it actually work? I mean, I don't mean the nuts and bolts, but I mean for the user, how does it work?
Yep. Okay, so the idea is you pair up the smart pen that you're using with your phone via Bluetooth. Then you write on smart paper that has these little dots on it, and it kind of works as a mapping tool. So when you write the word "the," that then gets reproduced digitally onto your phone.
But
so
as handwriting or as print?
So it depends on the product you use. So in the example of the Moleskine book, which we had in studio a few months ago, you can have it as both. You can either just have a digital version of your handwriting, or you can opt to have it transcribed or reproduced, I suppose, as digital text, which is brilliant. It's very handy.
I wonder, would Moleskine be able to read my handwriting?
I don't think so. No. I think we tried this, and I don't think they could do it.
I want to set up a group text, but I don't want members' telephone numbers displayed to other members. How do I go about that?
So that is a very important point in the era of GDPR. And the best route to go, if you use something like WhatsApp, and instead of creating a group, you can create a broadcast. And so you can create a broadcast list. So I could have that for 30 different contacts, and the 30 people would all get the same message, but they would just think it's to them. They wouldn't realize it's in a group chat. So that's probably the best way to go.
Could you ask Jess how to solve the following problem? I have with my Sony Xperia ZX since reloading my backup following repair. Pop-ups appear from Google when I'm using the phone. It's very annoying when I'm in the middle of sending a text, etc. The ads seem to be getting more frequent. 3 pop up every time I use the phone. I've tried all the settings, but no option to block them completely.
very annoying. This sounds like you may have downloaded an app. This happens, one of the guys actually from Off the Ball had this problem a few months ago. Go through the apps that are stored on the phone, because there may be something that's running constantly in the background and that's producing the ads, which are very infuriating. So go through and just delete any apps that you're not sure of or that you don't remember what they do. And that should hopefully solve the problem. That shouldn't be happening automatically. So there's definitely something running in the background there.
And if you just got rid of Chrome, for example, and then downloaded it a second time, would that...
That could work. But if it's something that's running in the background, it may not be the Chrome app. It may be something that's, you know, just it's set up to launch every time the phone is turned on. So I would try and do that and also go into the settings. And if you go into settings, apps, and then you can see what's running in the background. And if you just kill anything that looks a bit suspicious, that should hopefully fix it for you.
A final one for the moment. My 9-year-old daughter wants an iPad. My older children have iPad Mini and they like them, but I'm trying to change from Apple products as I think they're overpriced. I would like a tablet with a large screen, probably 10-inch. Can you recommend any brands or have you any thoughts on Hawaii Media Pads? That's from Joanne.
Yeah, so the Huawei ones are great, but I haven't had one for review, so I can't fully endorse it saying I've tested it and go for it. What I would recommend you do, if it's for a child, is look at the Samsung tablets, because Samsung have a range. Going from the Samsung Tab E, which is one that I bought for my niece to watch Peppa Pig on, it's powerful enough that it'll grow with her, but it's not super expensive. I think I got it for €120. If you want to invest a little bit more but not go up to the iPad prices, maybe look at some of the lower spec Samsung Tab 4, or see if there's a Samsung Tab 3 still available. They are incredible devices and will grow with your child. So as their expectations and demands develop, it'll stand the test of time.
And don't forget, there are Black Friday sales looming.
Yes, actually, that's what I want to say. Download the Price Spy app to your phone right now, and you can then check if you were, say, buying a vacuum cleaner or a tablet or anything. Just put in the product name and it'll scan everywhere, and on Black Friday and Cyber Monday it'll tell you the cheapest places to buy, and you will save an absolute fortune.
And that's called Price Spy.
Yes, that's the one.
Very good. Jess, thank you very much for joining us from Lisbon. Of course, you'll be back in time for Tech Talk on Sunday, I presume.
Yes, indeed.
Very good. Jess Kelly, thank you very much.